The WYSL stations present an hour of truth for the battered but proud people of the Empire State. From the financial and entertainment epicenter of New York City to the sleeping and empty small cities and towns of upstate, which once bustled with manufacturing, mining, and farming. We all know from inspiration, history, and nature, we deserve a return to the success and growth of generations past, a birthright being squandered by corruption in Albany, and the depredations of an insecure, scheming mountebank posing as governor, who loathes both us and himself. As liberty beckoned to enslaved peoples behind the Iron Curtain via American broadcasts after World War II, we now say, believe, rise, and join us. Welcome to Radio Free New York.
All right, welcome to Radio Free New York. I'm your host, Andrew Hollister. We are broadcasting from the WYSL studios, and I'm joined in studio by none other than Bob Savage.
Yes, broadcasting from our own studios, as opposed to broadcasting from Little Caesar's Pizza.
Yep, there you go.
So we don't have a guy in an orange wig, you know, waving at people, telling them to tune in.
No, we don't have that. We're also live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Periscope, all of the fun social media platforms. And I do have a friend here in studio. His name's Led, and he may or may not, you know, jump in on the conversation. So if you hear a voice you don't recognize.
Led, I thought it was Ed. Led, as in like Led Zeppelin?
Exactly, LED.
Yep, there you go. Yep.
Look at that.
So, yeah, so that's what's going on today. I've got so much content to go through today. There's no possible way we're going to get through. I think I've got like 4 hours worth of talking. So we're just going to see where we land today. But the first thing I want to ask people to do is go to the YouTube page, hit subscribe. YouTube will unlock our next set of features to get more content in front of people when we hit 1,000 subscribers. You guys helped us blow past 100 subscribers really, really quickly, really easily. So jump on YouTube, search Andrew C. Hollister, hit the subscribe button. We're trying to hit 1,000. So that's just the first thing. Get that right out of the way. And now is kind of an interesting article that I found. You guys may remember, I think it was last Friday, I talked about how we can hold the media accountable. And if you didn't catch that episode, check it out on the website, the Facebook page, the YouTube page. Go over there, listen to how I explained we should hold the media accountable. I talked about reaching out to the sponsors, the people who pay these media companies, and saying, if you sponsor this content that we don't believe in, that goes against our principles, or it's just flat out wrong, a lie that destroys somebody's life, we won't buy your product if you continue to advertise here. So I don't know if anybody over at Ontario Honda listens to the show or not, but something happened and they actually pulled their advertising. So we didn't speak about this on the show at all, but so many people covered.
On Monday, you mean?
Yeah, on Monday. Jeremy Kappel's controversy, him getting fired from, I think it was Channel 10, right?
Yes.
Channel
yes.
10.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, for what some people are calling a racial slur, other people are calling a slip of the tongue, and everything in between. This story actually went national. It's all over.
It went hugely national. Yep. Matter of fact, our morning host, who originates from Pittsburgh, called me this morning. He said, because he wanted to do a piece on it. So he said, well, what did Kappel actually say?
Yeah.
So I told him.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And so without going too deep into that, I mean, the mayor of Rochester has been like attacking this guy over it.
Well, she called for him to be fired.
She did. And ultimately he was. He was fired. He's fired.
And then she was doing victory laps online about, the station didn't respond until I got involved.
Yes.
That was not a well thought out thing to do. I don't know.
So this whole thing's happening. In the midst of this happening, this man has apologized. He has given his side of the story and still lost his job. And interestingly enough, Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter weighed in on the situation.
And really?
She did. Yep. On TMZ, she weighed in on the situation. And her response was he should not have been fired.
You know, it's interesting because we were talking about that in the station this week. And first of all, it's not Mayor Warren. This is me. This is not Andrew, folks. So keep those cards and letters. All right. But it's not the place of any politician to call for the firing of somebody in the private sector. You can deplore what they did. You can, you know, convene some kind of a panel or a town hall or whatever, however you want to explore the issue. But it's not for you to just declare from on high that somebody's head should roll.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that could definitely be construed as an abuse of power, an abuse of authority.
Warren, not for nothing, is already being sued, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. She's not by Jeremy Kappel, at least not yet.
Okay.
But she's being sued by the former principal of a Rochester charter school. I think it's called UPREP. And what she made a public pronouncement, once again, you know, ready, fire, aim. Mayor Warren goes out and says that this guy restrained a valedictorian from delivering his valedictory speech at graduation because he was black. It was a racial issue, which was not true at all. Yeah. It turned out that the kid just didn't want to give the speech.
Yeah, yeah.
So now the former principal, I don't know if he left his job as a result of this issue or whatever, but he's gone. His name is Joseph Munno, and he's suing. So,
interesting. Yeah, I'm not familiar with the story, but yeah, that's interesting. I know she's in the news for some other things as well that there's not enough information for me to talk about yet, but as soon as there is, you know, we'll certainly discuss it. But I thought this was interesting. So, you know, Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter weighs in and says, actually there's a quote here from her that I'm just going to read and then roll into what Ontario Honda did. Because I think they're worth mentioning, and what they did, I think, is the right thing to do for their organization. So she says, a broad sweep every time somebody says a racial slur, let's just fire them. We're just moving people around on the board. That's what she said. Obviously, an apology is warranted. And yes, he did apologize. Some people may feel that he just apologized because he was called out or that there was an outrage. But at the end of the day, I can't question a person's intent when they apologize.
Well, you know, it's a very valid point, and I think that's the salient point, because the real issue here is what was Jeremy Kappel's intent? Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about Jeremy Kappel, the proposition that he would have gratuitously thrown out this racial slur, calling Dr. King a C-O-O-N, it's just not a credible thing to believe, because obviously it would just end the guy's career. Which is essentially what has happened. So unless he was suicidal in terms of his career aspirations, that just is implausible. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And the thing that I said earlier this week is, how would Dr. King have handled this situation himself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people said that. I saw all over social media people, you know, giving their opinions based on Dr. King and how he led his life, that they don't think that he would have handled the situation like this at all.
Saying one word once? One word on the air? He said Jeremy Kappel said one word once. There wasn't a course of action. It wasn't a succession of incidents. Mm-hmm. It was just, I mean, and anybody who's been in this business, I said this numerous times this week too, as have many other media types, everybody says something stupid on the air.
Sure.
It's just a matter of time.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So what his daughter suggested was that maybe he should have gone through some sensitivity training. Maybe
suspend him for a week.
Suspended, demoted, and allowed to, you know, kind of like rebuild his reputation and stuff and then come back on the air. Those were just some suggestions that she had mentioned. But there's a lot of people in the local community who are very familiar with Jeremy Kappel, who believe that that was not his intent whatsoever, and have really kind of like rallied against Channel 10 over this. They have, and they've called the station, written letters, which I actually – it's just interesting, the timing of this, since this happened after I talked about how that's largely ineffective – when dealing with the media. The calls, the letters, the comments and stuff, it just increases their reach. It actually benefits them. But Ontario Honda did almost to the T what I mentioned, which is say you won't advertise anymore. Stop their ad revenue. And that's actually what Ontario Honda did. They reached out and said, listen, we're canceling all of our advertising with you. We're upset over this. We believe it was handled incorrectly. We don't feel like you're fixing the situation correctly. So we're not advertising with you anymore. And then they publicly said so. And I think that that is the only effective way to combat this sort of stuff.
Well, we have a simulcast arrangement with Channel 10. It's a long-time relationship, and it's been a very good one. But we've gotten some communications from the community suggesting that we end our relationship with Channel 10, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, you know, we have nothing to do with the personnel policies at WHEC. And secondly of all, we don't know the facts.
Yep.
WHEC knows what they know. They conducted an internal investigation. I know essentially what everybody else knows, and we know as a station pretty much what WHEC has chosen to say publicly. So it's none of our business.
No, it's not. But what I think I'm getting at is Ontario Honda felt it was dealt with incorrectly, reached out, and chose to vote with their dollars.
Well, they have a different relationship than we do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think that more people can vote with their money in ways that they don't necessarily think about. And I hope more people consider voting with their money to make change. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the government shutdown, because I've got some updates on that for you. So we'll be back in a moment on Radio Free New York.
This is Dom Genova, owner of Genesee Valley Motors in Avon, your no-nonsense car dealer. Well, we're your no-nonsense truck dealer, too, selling Rams and Fords up to the mightiest that they make. And we have a shop with Master Techs open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., 6 days a week, even Saturday, so you can get your truck serviced when it's not billing hours for you. You may not be used to that. Visit RochesterWorkTrucks.com. That's RochesterWorkTrucks.com.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
And welcome back here to Radio Free New York. We were just kind of talking about the government shutdown. But before I jump into that, if you're listening online, if you don't mind, just comment and let me know if you can hear the audio. I've got one person who said they can't, just trying to figure out if there's something on my end or something wrong on theirs. But just send me a comment. Let me know if you can hear the audio. Hopefully I'll get that fixed over.
Hey, Bob, over in Mission Control, maybe you could check too. What do you want them to check? You want to check
just Facebook? Log on to the Facebook page and
YouTube or whatever.
Click on the live stream, see if the audio is rolling. So the government shutdown. We are now, I think we're on day 20, 21. I think we're getting there. We're right about at the longest shutdown in history, which to me is great. I know some people, they kind of freak out about it. I think it's amazing. And I told you guys why in the last show. And I mentioned that the IRS was running at 12% of its staff, 12% capacity. So 88% is not operational right now. And they had the ability to collect your tax dollars, chase you for tax money, but they were saying that they didn't have the ability to give people refunds. Well, shortly after that radio broadcast, they announced they can also give us refunds. So the refund that I'm not looking for is for my tax refund. I want a refund on the 88% of bloat Oh, and we got the thumbs up. So it does
thumbs
sound
up from
like,
Bob. I guess it's your computer, Mr. Listener or Miss Listener.
Yep. So it sounds like I've got people commenting in. They say everybody can hear the stream. So it looks like just that one person maybe is having the problem. Awesome.
An isolated incident.
Yes, that's perfect. So I want the refund on the 88% bloat that the IRS has been running on.
If they're able to function on 12%, why do we need the other 88%?
Yeah, so I'm glad one of the listeners actually who listens to the show very regularly, he's probably listening right now. Shortly after that article was released, he posted on my page. He's like, hey, check this out. This article is published after your episode. And I was like, this is amazing. This is like... I hope more people see and hear that the IRS is running at 12% capacity and carrying out everything that they're supposed to be doing.
Well, they're operating with 12% of funding. Apparently, the capacity is more than 12%.
Clearly. So they're clearly way overfunded, way overstaffed. And that's not me saying, oh, all these people should lose their jobs. That's me saying, clearly it's bloated. They need to find some other place of work. Maybe they can be a CPA or something to help people get their tax dollars back. So I saw that, and I really wanted to share that with you guys. I talked last time about the things that are running during the government shutdown. I'm just going to run through that list for you just real, real quick in case you missed the last episode. Mail delivery, so our post offices, they're self-funded, so they're running regardless. Law enforcement, the majority of law enforcement is running. There are some areas that aren't funded, but for the overwhelming majority of law enforcement is funded. Our military has special exempt funding. Border Patrol, the overwhelming majority of Border Patrol is exempt. Social Security is funded. Medicare is funded. Medicaid is funded. Veterans benefits are funded. So all of those things are not impacted by the government shutdown. Things that are. Some national parks and museums. Some of them are closed. Some of them are operating on skeleton crews, bare-bone staff, or volunteers. That begs the question still, are these areas overfunded? Can the community take care of these areas, which is what's happening right now? Volunteers in the community who are not employed by the government whatsoever are getting up and going, yeah, I'll clean up my park. I'll volunteer to keep the museum open. It's important to them. They're now being vested in their community because government's provided something for them that they didn't really need. They could do themselves, but since it was always provided for them, there was no need for them to have that responsibility. So those are some of the things. Food stamps are funded through the end of January. Other child nutrition programs through February. So as I get a little more information on those, I know that's important to some of you. So I will find out specifically what happens next with that and make sure that I come back with that. So the reason
what I'm hoping here is that we're not going to have a situation where air traffic controllers and TSA agents are going to start quitting because that's going to bring an end to this. Once you start interfering with the commercial air traffic in the United States, the pressure is just going to get too great.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point. So I was reading an article that said that they're experiencing a lot of people calling in sick. So people in the TSA are not funded but actually working. So they're working. They're not getting a paycheck. That's not all employees, but it's a portion of them. And I think specifically it's the employees that pat you down, run you through security, who are experiencing this. And they're saying they're getting an extremely high number of sick call-ins. The number is not so high that it's outside of the margin of error for this time of year, especially now that we just got hit with some cold weather. So they can't really say if that's why, but I bet you there's a few at the very least who are thinking, yeah, I got to find some work somewhere. Maybe they're driving the Ubers out front now, taking people home instead of running them through security. So, the TSA, that's definitely a concern. That's a concern for a lot of people. I fly, I don't want to say often, but a couple times a year. So that's important to me.
Well, we got break week coming up. The middle of February when everybody goes to Florida, that's when, Disney World and Universal go crazy. It's just, especially from this part of the country to that part of the country, it's just crazy. The airlanes are nuts.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden there's a... there's a big problem because of the government shutdown. That is not going to work out well for the Trump administration.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of big trouble because of the government shutdown, I'm sure we've all heard the term "hold my beer." Right? It's an interesting term, you know. Usually before you decide to do something, maybe that you shouldn't, you know, hold my beer. Well, now the government shutdown is literally doing that because the government shutdown's impacting the brewing industry. So Americans who don't know, the federal government has their hands in just too many things. Plain and simple. One of those is the approval of beer labels. That's it. So what could
happen? Why are they in the business of approving beer labels?
Exactly. This is just blatant government overreach, bureaucracy, more things funded that really shouldn't be. The way this could easily work without a government entity in charge is you create your beer label. If it lies, that's fraud. You go to jail. Simple as that. No, the government has decided that they need their hands in the approval of these labels to make sure that the alcohol content is reported accurately. So as a result, any new beers that have been created, any new brews, new IPAs, new anything, has not been able to go out on the market since the government shutdown. Now,
horrors, we'll have to for a few weeks just drink the how many brands of beer are? I mean, there's so many beer labels.
Yeah. Yep. So there's I guess this is becoming a problem because there's so many craft breweries now, and these are the people
but
really
they can still make the stuff that
on.
They're currently making.
Yeah, I don't know. Like this.
How often do these craft breweries roll out new beers?
So the one of them in the Bronx says that they release a new one every week. So they're now, you know, 3, almost 4 weeks behind, and the beer that they've created for this for their releases, now they're almost at the point where it has to start being thrown away. So that's a big deal for them.
So don't make new beers until this gets resolved. I mean, yeah, I don't see this as a major problem.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, like, it seems to be a big deal. I'm not in the brewing industry, so I don't understand the process. I don't understand their business model. Atlas Brew, who is from Washington, D.C., they have a brand new apricot IPA, and they're saying it's already fermenting in the tanks. There's no timetable to get approved. So they're thinking it's all getting dumped. And to me, this is just ridiculous.
What do you mean by all? My understanding of these microbreweries is, as the name suggests, they brew in tiny quantities, relatively tiny quantities. Am I wrong on that? I mean,
I have no idea.
I'm not a big local beer guy, to be honest. I'm actually not a beer guy.
I'm not either. I'm a bourbon guy or a water guy. Those are basically the only two things I drink. So I don't know what's small. Is that right. You know, 10,000 gallons?
Maybe tiny in comparison to Anheuser-Busch, yeah. But for them,
yeah. Who knows? Right. Who knows? Yeah,
I think their labels are okay at Anheuser-Busch for now.
They're not dumping stuff.
But I mean, there's a simple fix for all of this, and that is emphasize the products that you have already. Is that an important part of their marketing to always have a new beer variety out every week?
It could be. It might be we only run this beer for 3 months or 3 weeks, and then we cycle in the new one, so it gives it like exclusivity or something. I'm not really sure.
If they are indeed brewing in small quantities, they probably have to keep that flavor turnover happening.
Yeah, yeah. So
the voice of Led, ladies and gentlemen, just joined us. Yeah,
Led joined us.
Been here the whole time.
So, So I love this. One of the guys on Facebook has commented in. He said he would offer to test the beer labels for free, and I think what he means is he'll drink the beer for them so they don't have to throw it away.
Well, that's important.
So, yeah. And actually, that brings up the volunteerism that's been happening during this government shutdown. You know, people volunteering to fix the things that government was doing, probably not well to begin with. And volunteers are doing that. So maybe we can get a bunch of volunteers to go to these various breweries and help remove this unlabeled beer for the breweries as volunteers.
I'll volunteer to run the IRS while you do that.
Yes, please. I would love to run the IRS.
What kind of a refund would you like, Andrew?
Yeah, I would just, All the refunds. So, I found that interesting because I didn't know that the federal government was involved in any part of the brewing process. And I didn't know that your label had to go through federal approval. And I didn't know that your beer is going to sit in a tank until that happens.
These local breweries don't distribute interstate, I don't think.
No. And that's – so I actually heard one of my other employees is like huge into craft brews. I mean, he'll drive the 6 hours to New York City to try a new beer that's only going to be available for like a few weeks.
And wait in line
for hours. He'll do it. And so he was saying that there's like local breweries who are basically in a lot of trouble because of this, that this is really putting them in a bad spot. It's hurting them. They basically can't produce. So there you have it. Federal government, we've just learned the next thing that they're involved in that they shouldn't be. And when we come back here after our break, I'm going to talk a little bit about cell phone carriers and some interesting stuff about who has access to your location data. So we're going to take a quick break here on Radio Free New York. We'll be back in a moment.
Get the podcast at WISL1040.com.
You're listening to the Voice of Liberty. AM 1040 Avon Rochester, FM 92.1 Rochester, FM 95.5 Spencerport, and WYSL1040.com everywhere.
At University Eye Specialists, I see many patients who suffer from dry, irritated, or itchy eyes. Sometimes these symptoms are often due to severe dry eye. Over-the-counter eye drops often help, but sometimes dry eye may require treatment with prescription medication. Dry eye is a very treatable medical condition that should be taken very seriously. The health of your eyes is very important to us. Please feel free to call any one of our local offices for an appointment.
In America, we are living longer, healthier lives. The longer we live, the more likely we are to develop eye conditions such as glaucoma, macular degeneration, and diabetic eye disease. If you are over the age of 40, it's important to have a thorough eye examination in order to identify vision-threatening conditions at an early stage. At University Eye, we have the technology and experience to screen for and to treat glaucoma, macular degeneration, and diabetic retinopathy. At University Eye, your vision is our mission.
Phone 1-800-724-0938.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
Thank you for joining us here again on Radio Free New York. You know, I found something that just struck me wrong, really bad. So I would say that the average American assumes that the government probably has in some way, shape, or form access to the data on your cell phone, to your location. Maybe they listen to your phone calls. I think at this point in our history, as unfortunate as it is, because I think that's wrong. I think it's a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. I think that the average American kind of feels that way, though. I think that when people go to send a text message, they think, yeah, maybe somebody else can read this. Or you make a phone call and they think, maybe somebody can listen to this. But I don't think that the average American thinks that a private company can have access to your information or specifically your location without your consent. And that's actually what's happening. At the very least, if you are a T-Mobile customer, an AT&T customer, or a Sprint customer. Because what Vice found out is that you can actually purchase real-time cell phone location data without a warrant, without any special anything, and it's for sale on the market. And
so what do you get? You just get metadata? You just get, like, numbers and...
Location on a map is what you get. So
associated with just a number.
Yep. So you can provide a phone number, whether that's a spouse, significant other, coworker, child, somebody who you're stalking. Please don't stalk people. That's bad. Don't stalk people. But, that's what it comes down to is as long as somebody has your mobile cell phone number, they can track your location in real time without your consent or even knowledge. No text message to your phone. Hey, somebody just pinged your location. No email to you. Nothing like that. So this to me was just felt like an additional violation of privacy that most people are not expecting, I don't think.
Well, what's that deal you can do on your cell phone where you can see every place that the phone has been?
Yeah, so that's like your Google history.
Yeah,
right?
your Google Maps history. That's
yep.
what it is.
Yep.
And so, of course, that's going to be available.
Sure.
Somebody's
going
to get that.
But what I think that most people assume Google knows everything, right? They just kind of like go into it thinking like Google knows all. Like, so sure, they have my location data too. And they're not thinking that Google's selling their real-time location, which to the best of my knowledge, Google isn't. But the cell phone carriers are. So the way this came down or how this happened was, and to be really, really clear, this is not law enforcement. This isn't access for law enforcement at all. Law enforcement actually has their own ways, their own methods, and they have to go through a warrant process to get your information. So this isn't like your local PD tracking the location of a known wanted criminal. This is somebody who wants to know your location, and they have your cell phone number, and they pay for access to where you are right now. So this actually came about specifically for bounty hunters and financial institutions with the idea that they would protect you from fraud. So they could know when you're using your card.
Oh, I feel better already.
Yes.
This is for your own good.
Yes, for your own good. Sure. To make you safe. So that's kind of where this started, or at least how it's being explained that this started. So some companies popped up. It looks like there's about 7 major companies right now that you can get hooked up with. And they provide what they call like data aggregation of location services. So basically purchasing your real-time location from Sprint, AT&T, T-Mobile, holding it somewhere in a data warehouse, and as people purchase subscriptions for access to this data, they just get it. So financial institutions, you swipe your credit card, they ping your cell phone, and they find out the GPS location where you are. And if you're not there, oh, they might mark it as fraud. Bounty hunters, specifically jail bondsmen, who people have skipped out on paying their bail. They use these services to recover the people and their money. So some people at a brief look might think, oh, that's good. But no, it's not. You've never consented to this. You've never accepted this. And you're like, well, it's to catch bad people. That doesn't change it being okay or not. You can't just bend the rules and break the rules because there's bad people out there. So I have a...
There are rules?
Yeah, well...
Are there really?
Yeah. I mean, some people say the rules only exist to be broken. But this really just twisted me the wrong way. So then I do a little more research on this, and I find that there's actually been cases where law enforcement has used these services to bypass warrants, which then that really twists you the wrong way. So there's been instances where... people are running an investigation. They couldn't get a warrant approved, so they bypass the warrant process entirely, purchase the location data from one of these data aggregators to get the location where the court said, you don't have enough evidence, you don't have enough reason or probable cause to have this information, and they use this to circumnavigate it.
Sadly, I'm not surprised. The Constitution is under attack everywhere. It's really... And unfortunately, because younger people have not been properly educated as to the importance of the Constitution, and particularly the Bill of Rights, there's not a respect, a reverence for the Constitution and what it means and how unique it is as a governmental structure.
No.
So people are blasé about this, and it's not a good thing. I know that in cases of... Where you have CPS things, child welfare issues.
Yeah,
we've had instances of law enforcement just basically barging onto people's premises, and when the homeowner objects and says, "Wait a minute, where's your search warrant?" They're pinned against a wall and told to mind their own business.
Yep.
We're not worried about the Constitution.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So to me, this is a huge, huge privacy violation. The overwhelming majority of people have no idea that your cell phone number... I mean, my cell phone number is on my business card. you know, and I've given out thousands of them. So at any time, somebody can punch in my cell phone number and know where I am. Now, does that mean I'm doing something wrong or anything like that? No. But I have the right to, you know, have my life remain private for people not to know maybe where I live or where I hang out, you know, where I enjoy eating lunch. You know, and I get some people post that stuff all over Facebook. That's their choice. But I typically don't. And a lot of other people don't. So I see this as a really, really big issue. There are a few senators who are working on putting together and proposing some legislation to make sure that people are notified, actually give consent, like this sort of thing. Of course, none of these senators are from New York State. You know, no surprise there. And they're calling for an investigation into the sale of this information.
An investigation, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, this will be dragged on for years and years with hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money. And then ultimately, the corporate lobbyists will probably win. So, but what I did find along this, totally unrelated, I stumbled across it and I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. Let me bring this in. So I found the world's most secure cell phone. It's actually called the NoPhone original cell phone.
It's called a burner phone that you get at Wegmans.
No, this is even better than that. So I'm going to post the link to this in the Facebook feed for those of you who are streaming on Facebook right now. And you guys can go to this link and check this out. This is the NoPhone original cell phone. And when you look at the product page here on Amazon, you'll see, and you could buy it, I'm sure, from anywhere, but Amazon's just where I happen to be. It looks like a cell phone, but it's actually just a piece of plastic, and it was designed for it's $14.99, and I don't get paid to talk about this product. Okay, you know, I found it. I thought this was terrible and hilarious all at one. This phone was actually built to help people who have an attachment to their cell phone break away, so they still have something in their pocket, they still have something in their hand. To help them break through the anxiety of not having their cell phone.
$15, huh?
For $15, you can start your path to recovery and reconnect to the real world. And it's great. I mean, their advertising is awesome. They've sold over 12,000 of them already, apparently. It's hacker resistant. It's toilet bowl resistant.
Yeah.
It's got this breakthrough no camera with 0 megapixels. The battery life is amazing. You'll never charge it ever. And it will keep you from corporate entities and your government spying on you. Now, they don't advertise that piece, but I think maybe they should. After finding out this information, I think that should be something they sell, is like, hey, you don't want corporate entities tracking your information. You don't want the government spying on you. You know, buy this no phone. There you go. So
somewhere P.T. Barnum is smiling.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just thought this was a hilarious, awesome product. But I also kind of felt bad about it. And the reason I felt bad about it is the fact that
12,000, I feel bad about the fact I didn't dream it up.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? I mean, what's it cost to, they could probably 3D print these things. They don't even have
cost of manufacturing in China, 38 cents.
Yeah.
And they sell them for $15.
Yeah. But the part I felt bad about was the fact that people need this in society today. I mean, literally, they're advertising that this will help you keep connected to the real world, which I think is just so indicative of a problem that we have right now, of people being so deeply ingrained in mobile technology. And I work in the technology field. I develop technology. I love technology. It's how I make my living. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about it. I spend a lot of time just like building cool new things. But I look at something like this and realize that people have anxiety because there's not a phone in their pocket, and think that there's got to be something. Maybe this is the first step. Maybe this is the first step to helping these people reconnect, heal, become whole again, I guess. I don't know. I saw that and I was like, yeah. This is a real problem. So, head over there. If you need one, buy one today. You'll be safe from your government, I guess. You'll be safe from corporate entities. You'd never have to recharge the phone ever again. And Michelle on Facebook says, oh, this is like AA for cell phones. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And kind of like you said, Bob, I'm just disappointed. I didn't think about this. I mean, it's
like a pet rock.
Yeah, it's like a pet rock. Way cooler, matches today's kind of like landscape for what people want. And this is how they're going to reconnect with the real world.
It's got a nice dollop of today's angst in there, too, because you got to have that.
Yep, absolutely. So
maybe
so,
a little victimology. I'm a victim. I have to overcome something with a fake plastic phone.
Yep. But I also think this could be really good for parents who have young kids who all their friends at school have a cell phone. And you can give them, instead of a $1,000 iPhone, because that's what the iPhone costs now, you can give them a no phone, and they can brag to all their friends about the features. I don't have to charge my phone.
Buddies all go, hey, here comes Andrew with his no phone.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would totally rock the no phone if I didn't have a job and things like that that I had to be connected to the world with. But, yeah, so there it is. That's the no phone.
Next, we'll have the no fanny pack.
Yes. We're just going to QVC the rest of the show. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back on Radio Free New York in a moment.
From Avon Feed and Supply, introducing Dry Shod waterproof footwear. Dry, comfortable feet, even on those warmer days. Avon Feed has a big selection of Dry Shod for men and women, offering fully flexible athletic shoe sizing for great fit and maneuverability. Its exclusive insulation breathes and keeps you warm without bulk, and you'll stay dry top to bottom with state-of-the-art waterproofing. While you're at Avon Feed, find everything for your pet, from feeding bowls to toys, leads, collars, beds, crates, and tie-outs. Avon Feed and Supply has what the big pet chain stores will never have. Tim Cole and his great knowledgeable staff. And if you think you'll save money at that pet superstore, well, think again. While you're at Avon Feed, don't forget the two-legged pets with River Rat Thousand Island cheese and great flavors, including hard-to-find mean and nasty, plus once again nut butters, Nunday mustards, and Rickles pickles. Open weekdays 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 4. Avon Feed and Supply. West Main Street at the bottom of the hill, just west of the Circle.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
Okay, Andrew, put down your no phone.
Yeah,
back on the air
here
now.
Here we are. Yep, I think I'm going to buy stock.
Look up,
these
look up.
Guys, after this episode, I'm going to go buy stock in the no phone, and hopefully their sales just like skyrocket. So the no phone. That's just such a bad thing that needs to exist, but a great thing that somebody made it. And I hope it helps people. That's the best I can say. And speaking of helping people, and you guys, I've got to be sick of this at this point, but I'm not going to stop. And that is, I'm going to remind you about Ben Wassel. I'm going to remind you that he has an appeal. He's the first victim of the New York Unsafe Act. Yes, I call it the Unsafe Act because it didn't make anybody in New York safer. Actually, that's not true. I take that back. The New York Safe Act made being a criminal safer in New York. It gave them a safer working environment. If you're a criminal, specifically somebody who breaks into homes, your liability insurance probably went down a little bit after the Safe Act got passed, because it was much safer to break into people's homes and commit crimes because the law-abiding citizen was not able to protect themselves as they were before, or as they're able to in, I think, 48 other states, 48, 47, depending on what New Jersey and California do. So Ben Wassel has a court appeal. He's the first man made a victim by the SAFE Act. He's also a United States military veteran. He's 90% combat disabled. He has a wife and I believe two children. And I personally plan on February 28th at 9 a.m. to be at the courthouse at 50 East Avenue in Rochester, New York, to support that appeal and to have a presence there so that the judge and elected officials see that this is important to me. And hopefully it's important to you, too. If Second Amendment rights or any constitutional rights are important to you here in New York, We need to stand up. We need to come together as a community, and we need to show them that we're watching and that this is important to us. So I hope you'll join me. That is February 28th. It is 9 a.m., 50 East Avenue in Rochester, New York. Yes, there's a possibility it could be rescheduled again. For those of you who February 28th maybe sounds like the wrong date, the date was originally in January, but it got rescheduled. Part of the reason it got rescheduled is because the state attorney general said, no, we're going to fight this. And so they actually asked for basically an additional month's worth of time to make sure that they continue to ruin this guy's life. So this is why I'm doing. You're going to hear me keep talking about this, keep broadcasting this. It's important to me. I hope it's important to you.
In the event that people can't make this, and I would say that probably practically speaking, the majority of folks listening can't make this actual event. Some folks can, and that's great if you can. Is there some other form of support, some other way that we can support Ben Wassel?
Yeah, so what I'll do, I'll find the link for the GoFundMe page. I don't have it with me right now, but there is a GoFundMe page.
I'll look it up real quick while you're talking.
You know, for his fees, because I'll tell you what, this isn't the first SAFE Act case I've followed. This isn't the first SAFE Act case I've supported. And the last SAFE Act case that I helped, we raised over $10,000 towards legal fees. And I don't know that that even covered the whole thing. My guess is it probably didn't. It's very expensive. And if you can't get a job because you now have felony charges from the SAFE Act, it makes it hard. You can't get by for your family. You can't get a job. You know, it destroys your at-home life, your family life. You know, and this is just some of the very few things that this does to you. At some point, there's somebody who I want to bring on the show and have them explain to us their experience and what being convicted under the SAFE Act did to them. But I'll, you know, we'll see when they're ready to talk, because it's a very emotional thing, and not everybody's ready to come forward and talk about what that looks like.
Hey, you want to go to GoFundMe.com, and the fund is the Benjamin Wassel Legal Defense Fund. As of now, we have $10,656, which you mentioned, of a $50,000 goal. The somewhat distressing thing about this is that took 70 months.
Yeah, yeah. That money that was raised at that point, I think, was spent on his first court case.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they've made much more than a couple hundred dollars in the last few months. So I think that's actually the starting point, is just over the 10,000, and I think that was back in like 2013 or 14
mm-hmm.
when that was raised to help this guy out.
Created March 19th, 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
Jacqueline Hurley Wassel is his bride.
Yeah.
Last donation made was $40 2 days ago. So you folks want to go to GoFundMe.com and look for the Benjamin Wassel Legal Defense Fund. And, you know, give $50 or $100.
Yeah, yeah. Or just do it this way. You know, if you can't get off from work, you know, calculate what 2 hours of work would have cost you that you would have taken off. Donate whatever that number is. You know, I know times are hard for a lot of people. Money's tight. There's no question about that. But if you believe in it, donate, you know, a couple hours worth of work if you were to take off. You know, so that's, you know, 1,000+ people coming together to donate, you know, even $10. There you go. We've doubled what's been
raised. Some folks, I was just reading some of the donations. There are some donors on there who are going through their own legal battles.
Yes.
Their own prosecutions, their own persecutions. And both are the case with this dopey SAFE Act, and they're still donating.
Yeah.
So God bless them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I left you guys with this, I think, on Monday, and that was Cuomo's inaugural speech. And I confess, I still haven't listened to it. But I did pull some talking points that I figured we could end the show with. Just a few things that rubbed me as worth having a discussion about, I think. I think it's like 2 hours long, and I just have a hard time finding 2 hours in my day to listen to a guy that I don't like listening talk.
Not as long as I can feed myself.
Right? Yeah, yeah, it's really hard. So the first quote that I think really stood out to me in his inaugural address was that he was attacking the federal government. And specifically, he said that They have sought to demonize our differences and make our diversity our greatest weakness rather than our greatest strength. And I'm sure if we went digging through the audio files, we'd probably find somewhere him saying that conservatives have no place in New York.
Right.
And that's a phrase that he used 3 years ago, I think, was when he said that, about 3 years ago.
It's just the hypocrisy just never stops
exactly.
from this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he turns right around and says, we need to reach across the aisle and we need to all get along. We need to have dialogue. We need to stop demonizing things and issues. And then, two sentences later, he's urging the impeachment of Donald Trump.
Exactly. So when I heard and saw this quote, I was like, this is the guy who said, a few years ago, conservatives have no place in New York. If you have a certain political ideology that doesn't line up with his, you don't belong here at all. And then about a month ago, I think it was, he said something very similar again, not just about conservatives, but about social Democrats as well, saying that they're the problems now in New York when his own base started turning against him over the Amazon deal. And so he's doing exactly what he's complaining about. And that to me just jumped right off the bat. It was like the first thing that my eyes were drawn to is like, this is the guy who's pushing everybody away because of that diversity. Now he's accusing somebody else of it. So that to me was just wanted to get that out there. The next quote, I think that you probably will enjoy this, Bob. He says, America's only threat is from within. It's the growing division amongst us.
Well, I agree with that, but not the way he means it.
Exactly. And then he goes on to say, he's gonna be the light to lead the way through the darkness.
Uh-huh.
And when I read that, I literally smiled to myself. I like laughed out loud and was just like, he is the threat here in America, creating the division, especially for upstate versus downstate. I mean, they just hammer that wedge in as hard as they can. And the idea that he's going to be the light that leads us through the darkness was just laughable to me.
Well, the late Bill Nogi, who used to host the show on this station, used to say that Cuomo and his cronies in the New York legislature see upstate as a giant park.
Yes.
And implicit in that, you see that in the tourism ads that they run this time of year, where it's just a bunch of footage of people skiing mm-hmm. and snowboarding.
Yeah.
And
yep.
that's what they see us as.
Yeah.
They don't feel that upstate should have industry or commerce or mm-hmm. Its own independent economy. They want us all completely dependent on government.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, when his office replied to the news when they asked him about the growing opposition to him in upstate New York following the election, because he didn't win any county in upstate New York. It was very clear when they responded, and I forget what exactly words they used, but basically it was along the lines of, well, the ones who are important, the populated areas, that's what we got. And that was it. And it's just very clear that we're less population, so we matter less.
Thank God for the Electoral College, because that reflects the attitude of most progressives.
Yeah, yeah.
If it were up to progressives, the country would be ruled by New York, Illinois, possibly Florida, and California.
Yeah.
And the flyover country be damned.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. So the next thing he said is something that everybody should pay attention to and just remind him of this every time he speaks. Because he says that, I say I will not govern in a partisan way, and my administration will not be a partisan administration.
Yeah.
So there's Governor Cuomo's promise to you, promise to upstate. Every single person listening to this show, remember those words, and man, hold them to it every possible chance that we can. Because I think that's... That's like a great thing to say.
Oh, by the way, did we mention that Kevin Parker wants, in order for you to get your pistol permit renewed or to get a new one, that they want to go through 3 years of your internet searches? Is it such a thing as I don't think it's possible.
We've talked about it before.
That's certainly not partisan.
No, no. And there's just no way. I mean, that I hope that dies right on the floor. That bill is awful. And
I don't think it's possible to even implement it, is it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, if once it becomes law, then what they'll do is make it so that all the internet providers have to provide your internet search history if you're a firearm owner. And they won't be able to pinpoint it to you. So it'll be, you know, people in your neighborhood, people who use your stuff. So, yeah, it would be an invasion of not just your privacy, but the privacy of everybody around you. And at that point, everybody needs that phone.
The wet dream of government.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just really bad. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Free New York. We'll be back on Monday, and maybe we'll talk about the TSA some more on Monday. So, thank you, guys. Mm-hmm.